My name is Roberto Ransom, and I was born in Mexico City, but I've been living in Chihuahua for 12 years because my wife is from here. I'm a writer and I'm a university professor. I've always taught at public universities for the last 25 years or so, in humanities departments and fine arts schools. The organization here is a response to the what began with this procession in Cuernavaca. But at the same time, there are many groups. There are many groups of the civil society. There are many groups that have been working hard for the last many decades, actually, a couple of decades, to choose Juárez, because Juárez was a city of 1,200,000 people, and it's now down to 800,000. 150,000 to 180,000 of the wealthier, richer people of Juárez have crossed over to El Paso, set up businesses in El Paso in order to get away from the violence. And it's a city that has a very, very sad history, because going back all the way to the early 70s, there have been the death of young women who work mostly in the assembly plants. And these deaths have never been resolved. And they're now, there's a very, very high number, and these deaths continue. And that's sort of the most horrible, everything's horrible, but this is like the most unforgivable, horrible, unthinkable, irrational aspect of the violence that we're living in many different senses in Mexico. And the lack of response, the fact that, I think mostly the fact that people who have nobody to speak for them, who have nobody to stand for them, who have nobody to be their lawyer. And yet we live in a republic, and supposedly we have a judicial system, and we have a federal government, and we have police forces, and yet it would seem that we don't. So there are many people who in the last years have become very fearful, and it's very comprehensible. But because they become fearful, they isolated themselves. And that just it's a lousy condition, no? And it permits any type of bad government, or because people are fragmented. Right now, it's the caravan began in Mexico City. It follows sort of the route of pain, and it's tried to go to the different cities which have lived the most direct violence from the war against the cartels, the drug cartels, and an irrational war, a war that everybody has said, there's no way that to the interior of a country can this be resolved. It's a binational problem, it's an international problem. And it's a problem of market, it's a problem of education, it's a problem of social health. It's not something that you go out to the streets and fight frontally and with the army. And so what's happening here is, this is, I don't know, began in Mexico City, it's gone to maybe seven cities before Chihuahua, and this is the last stop before Juárez. So here the organization, in the last month, it was just a response to this, so different commissions were set up, and we've been working hard to receive El Javier and to receive the whole caravan, about 600 people, 500, 600 people, a number that grows exponentially in the cities, and then the people that go on in the north of the country, the distances are tremendous. They're just, I don't know if you've noticed, they've just opened tremendous spaces, you know? So that's what we're doing. And they leave today at midday for Juárez. So many different ways. First of all, the security forces, the army, the different police forces, be it at a federal level, at a state level, at a municipal level, becomes very ambiguous. There's really nobody to account for different deaths, different abuses, different threats. So that would be one of the first points. No, there's no clear authority. There's no clear relationship with what's happening. And there's like a confusion as to who's in charge, and as to who is accountable, who's to be held accountable. A second thing would be the corruption, would be the money laundering. And that's been going on for a long time. So the boom, a certain economic boom of the city, like in many cities in Mexico, was followed by the beginning of fighting between the different cartels and the cartels in the federal government. So the violence began 3 years ago, more or less. And as I don't have the figures for you, but it's impressive. It's gone from a city that had, I don't know, 80 homicides a year, or don't follow my figures, but it's just grown exponentially. The amount of murders, amount of homicides, amount of a lot of kidnapping, a lot of carjacking with violence, many times killing the person. So in that sense, on the one hand, the money laundering, on the other hand, the crime, and the crime is accompanied, this crime between the federal government and the cartels at the same time are fighting for their turf, is accompanied by crime in general. Because it's we have a saying in Spanish, Rio Revuelto, ganancia de pescadores. So it's any criminal is, and there's no, there's, it's, there, in English you also say impunity. No, the impunity is tremendous. The amount of cases that are solved are 2%. The judicial system's not working. The government is not really representing the majority of the people. The economy's been affected tremendously. The power groups, the strong men in the different parts of the Sierra and in different parts of the state, they've taken control of the communities. It's their law. There's no other law. And they've abused in many ways, agriculture, the forestry, the people themselves have been used for labor, and these are just strong men, and a lot of the testimonies right now are regarding that, the testimonies of the Rarámuri, and then the testimony of a young woman from Durango who's Huichol, and they're the ethnic groups, and they've always been the marginal among the marginal, but now it's the urban poor marginal, and then it's the rural poor marginal. We had a drought in Chihuahua that lasted 10, 11 years, and it was the worst drought in history, in written history in Chihuahua. And that affected the agriculture, so many people went to the cities. And already Chihuahua is highly concentrated in the cities. Only 4 million people in a state this size. And yet most live in Juarez, Chihuahua, Delicias, Parral, Cuauhtémoc. And so we've lost economy, the agricultural economy. So in many facets, it's touching. Now, in, as regards to safety, as a family, where we live in fear, and our children, some of my children, my oldest son that you met is 22 years old, and my daughter is 20, my younger son is 16, and it's their age to be young, and to enjoy life, and to be able to enjoy life. And they've been very intelligent as a generation and as a group of friends to move together, to take care of each other, to use houses instead of places to go party. They go to houses, they respect certain limits, but they've been very intelligent. I admire them profoundly in that sense. It's very sad. It's very sad, and I think there's a lot of good feeling, you know, from people to people. And there's now a very, very large population of Mexican-Americans. These Mexican-Americans are, I think, a very, very positive community within the United States. And that community has shown that if they had the opportunities in Mexico, then they're very hard-working people on the whole, Mexican people. And they're very responsible, and they're very community-oriented. So the relationship with the United States is very complex. It's a very painful one historically. We are neighbors, but sometimes it would seem we're not. And yet, there's a lot of a level of you know, people to people, at a level of writer to writers. There's a lot of contact. There's a lot going on that's very good. But the United States definitely, I feel personally can't support a project that pretends to solve the problem in a nation, going against the cartels through the Mexican military or through the Mexican armed forces. It seems contrary to me, irrational, actually, irrational. So I don't understand that. I see a division, and maybe I'm being far-fetched here, but I'm going to go for it anyways. But between the United States as a people and the United States as a government and as an empire and as a force. And even as a government, I think the nation state is in crisis. And one asks oneself, what is that nation state responding to? And it would seem that in many cases it's finances and it's media and it's many powers that are no longer, we're in a transition worldwide. And each country has to place itself within this transition and try to figure out a road. But I think the response is plural. I don't think there's one model. I think globalization is a reality. And it's a reality. There's no way to ignore it or to deny it. But that doesn't mean it's the only reality. So it's complex. I would say I definitely, the United States should not be supporting this war. And I think we have to seriously improve the relationship as neighbors. Historically, it's time. It's time. We can't be in so many ways so close historically in communities and population and being of this world rather than the old world. So many things and not be closer. Not work better in so many issues. So, I'd like to add something. This is hope for us. This is hope. When we were in Mexico City in the main square on the 8th of May, there was a great seriousness, a great gravity beneath everything. But on the surface, there was hope and there was joy. And I think that's what this has brought to Chihuahua, and it's brought to Durango, and it's going to take to Juarez. It's the beginning of a process. It's very long. In order for Mexico to heal, it's going to be at least a generation. It's systemic. It's systemic in so many different ways. It's a very rich country and yet extremely poor country, extremely polarized. So I just wanted to add that. I wanted to thank you for being here, both of you. Thank you for covering this. And I'm very, very moved by what is happening right now. And I think the important thing is to respond, not to cross one's arms and just watch things pass, but to respond.